nine o'clock, please take your seats. Please put away your in-flight entertainment devices. Open the windows, make sure your seatbelt is firmly fastened. And be prepared to take off. No trouble at all. You can't hear. Okay, I will speak with a louder voice so everybody can hear in the whole hotel. No, okay. So, welcome everybody to our first day of learning how to meditate, to relax, and become so peaceful. There's many things you can put into your stomach to make you feel happy, but in the end, it always turns out this little brown stuff which comes out the other end. But what you put into your mind, if you have peaceful, beautiful things which you eat with your mind, then you will be healthier and happier for a long, long time. What we call food for the heart. And if you get food for the heart, then you get so happy, peaceful, and your life has a greater meaning to it. And that's why we do meditation. To give ourselves some peace, some happiness, some meaning. And even I saw one of the t-shirts this morning, the great saying, the wisdom which comes from silence. Unfortunately, it's so hard to have some silence. In the hotel, it's very hard to have some silence. There's always music in the background going on somewhere. But the biggest noise is that which is happening constantly between our ears. That thing which we call thinking and worrying and remembering and planning. All of that stuff which can drive us crazy, which can make us get so angry and so upset. And I think I might as well start now with my first joke of the morning. Mr. Trump. Another Mr. Trump joke. If it wasn't for Mr. Trump, we wouldn't have so much humor in our modern world. So Mr. Trump, I'm not sure if you watched the news, Mr. Trump just went to see his Holiness the Pope in the Vatican, had a meeting with him. But what wasn't recorded was he asked the Pope, he said, "Look, I'm really having a lot of difficulty with the media, especially with the Washington Post and New York Times. Can you help?" He said, "Certainly, I'll ask God to intervene." And so, when he returned to the United States, Donald Trump found he could walk on water. So he went to that big lake in front of the Lincoln Memorial, and he walked on water. And the New York Times put on its next headline, "Trump, even more incompetent than we thought, he can't even swim." So, sometimes you just can't live. That's just to get yours of attention. But when it comes to calming the inner mind down, for so many people that's the most difficult part of their meditation. You can tell them to be mindful. You can tell them to just watch your breath. You can tell them all these different techniques. But it's sitting here, and either you fall fast asleep, or you end up thinking and fantasizing and dreaming and writing your own autobiography even though you're only 6 years of age. You can do anything like that. But how can we get the mind to be peaceful and calm? First of all, to prove it is possible. Because sometimes people, when I teach the meditation, when they come across this path for the first time, they say, it's impossible, you always have to be thinking. And because of that, I developed this very simple technique. Many of you have heard it before, but some of you haven't. Even if you've heard it before, please give it a try, listen to it. Because this is proving to you how easy it is to be mindful, to be aware, without even one thought going through your mind. Because as I am speaking, you will begin to notice there are some pauses between my words. In those gaps between my speech, what was occurring in your mind? You weren't thinking, you were silent. Silent awareness. How easy it is for a second to make it longer than that. You start trying to speak because that is habit. We have just been conditioned to always have to think about things. I often recall from where I was trained, where I grew up, in school. I'm sure it happened to many of you, as it happened to me. The teacher would look at me and say my name, if I was actually a was Peter. Peter, what do you think about that? And I would say, nothing, sir. And I would get scolded for that. You weren't allowed not to think about things. We all had to have our opinion on everything rather than just saying nothing, sir. So because of that, we've been trained, we've been conditioned, we've been brainwashed, we've been mentally abused by our school teachers to think too much. And because of that, now when it's the time not to think, we just can't do it. We have nothing to think about during this retreat. You don't have to worry how you're going to get to work. You're not doing any work, except for me. But you don't have to think about anything. Uh-oh. Someone's stalking me. I can see you behind there. So, we don't need to think about anything. We don't need to plan anything. You're on retreat. What does retreat mean? You're retreating away from work. Retreating away from all the busyness you have to do in life. You don't have to worry about getting to work in time. On this retreat, I give you my permission to be late. You don't have to be on time. So stop stressing out. I won't get up in time. You will get up in time. You'll always wake up in time for breakfast. Maybe not at 6 o'clock, what do you mean? For breakfast, certainly, yes. But don't have to worry and put pressure on yourself to meet deadlines. That's what they call deadlines. They make you dead. They kill people. So, for goodness sake, relax. And when you don't have to have deadlines, you don't have to plan so much. You have plenty of time here. You can go to the shower whenever you feel like it. You don't have to. These things. That's one of the reasons why we used to have lots of incense in the temples. Because I don't feel like going to the shower today, that's fine. The incense will last all the smells. That's why the more incense you burn in the temple, it means the more smelly must be the people who go there. That's my theory. But anyhow, you don't have to worry about this. You're retreating. What are we retreating from? We're getting a holiday to get away from it all. And what do we mean by getting away from it all? All the busyness, all the worry, all the fear. This is your holiday. It's great being a monk, but I have holidays all the time. Because I can get away from it all. I have a very busy monastery. I said yesterday, 25 monks in my monastery this year, and lots of lay people as well, 11 nuns. And you guys would think you've got no trouble just with one wife. I've got like 11 sort of nuns. But they're not. And big Buddhist societies, not one. So I've got a lot of burdens, but I know how to go on retreat, so let it go. I realize I don't need to worry about it, and I don't. You don't have to worry about your job. It probably won't be there by the time you get back anyway. No, it will be. You don't have to think about stuff, just relax and let it be. And on purpose, in particular, you don't have to worry about checking your emails. How many times do you check your emails every day? How many times do you check SMSs? Maybe once a day at most. Listen, you're not that important. You don't have to keep looking. So just once a day or something at most. And if somebody dies, they die. If something happens, it happens. It doesn't really matter. Checking your email won't keep them alive. So just let it pass. So you can have some retreat, time off. Now just with things like emails and SMSs and all this other stuff on the internet, why are people so addicted to the non-mortal devices? All it is fear. The fear of not looking at your iPhone. The fear that something might go wrong. You miss out on something. I give you a challenge on this retreat for the next few days. See if you can try that. Just give yourself the time, maybe half an hour a day, to do checking on emails and keep it strictly. So the rest of the day you don't have to look at them. You don't have to bother. You can keep peaceful. If you can do that, you'll find it's much easier to be able to quiet your mind when you're meditating. It's the same addiction to always figuring things out, controlling things, doing stuff. You think the more information you have, the more you think it through, the more control you have in life. I understand that's totally wrong. I don't plan very much at all. In fact, even coming here yesterday afternoon, when I landed, I didn't know which way to turn, who could have picked me up. But I didn't meet somebody. I just came out of the airport, someone found me, I'm very easy to notice, and gave me a lift. So I'm not worried. you're always going to have somebody to look after you. I remember one of my aunts years ago. They came back from overseas, landed in Perth, and those of you who've been to the monastery where I live, opposite from the retreat centre, it's about an hour's drive from the airport to the monastery. And I said, when are you coming back? Let me know, and I'll arrange you there. She said, no, I'm not going to arrange anything. And I never knew when he was going to arrive, what place, so I couldn't arrange anything for him. He just arrived, walked out of the airport, see what happens. He only got about 100 yards down the road, somebody stopped and gave him a lift all the way to the monastery. This is not getting a taxi, it's even better than Uber. It's karma. If you've got a good car, you get this anywhere, and it's better than Uber because it's for free. So, trust in your goodness and everything tends to work out. You don't need to plan so much and worry so much. So, if you can, retreat from all of that. Do it differently. Have a different way of doing things when you're here. This is a holiday. Make the most of it. Enjoy it. Don't plan it. See what happens every moment. And after a while, you'll find it actually goes much better when you stop worrying about things. The life tends to flow really smoothly. You're not anxious about what might happen. When I was 10 or 11 years of age, I got my first bicycle. And riding on a bicycle, I was so scared of falling off that my hands, my knuckles went white as I gripped the handlebars out of fear. My body was so stiff. And because I was so afraid of falling off, and my body was stiff, that's why I kept falling off. Because I was afraid, I could sort of relax and just let my body sort of bend when the bike went around the corner and just become loose. But as soon as I got my confidence, and I didn't fall off the bike, I learned something there, that when you're afraid of what might happen, then you make it happen. You make it much more likely. So what we learn here is just to let the future just unroll. Don't be so afraid. Because what you're afraid of usually may happen. That's why, one of the reasons why Mr. Trump got elected, because too many people were afraid what would happen if he did. That's the main cause, I don't know. It's actually more than that than you think. That's actually very profound, very true. All in a train of, we've been about. But, how do we, this is just ticking around the edges of how to stop our thinking mind. But to really look at it in a more effective way, I always like to ask people just to stand back from your thinking mind. Don't try and control it, but just stand back and observe it, look at it. Because it's a basic principle in meditation, actually a basic principle in life, I would say, that wisdom power is always far more effective than willpower. Don't try and control your mind and will it to be still and force it and use all your efforts. Instead, use your wisdom. It's a wisdom power which works, not efforts. And to get that wisdom power growing, we need to be able to observe, to get the information, to gain the data. That is one of the great effects of mindfulness, awareness, of actually gathering the information, the data, finding out how we work, how our body works, and how our emotions work, and why we react this way and why we react another way. And if one can develop that, then it's so easy to find peace in your life. And when it comes to the thinking mind, the problem is that we can never really be that mindful if we're right in the middle of our thoughts. if we are what I call entangled with the thinking. And to explain what I mean, I usually give a simile, which often happens because when I do travel, I usually travel through Singapore, and I know because I've passed this so many times in Terminal 3, Changi Airport, right in the middle, there's this sports lounge. And there's always playing soccer on this sports lounge, usually EPL soccer. And I see all these men usually sitting there watching the soccer match on a big screen. And every now and again, see them stand up and say, "That was offside! That was not a goal! That's not a goal there!" And they're doing this in Changi Airport. And the match was played at Wembley Stadium. And it doesn't take a physicist to understand. It doesn't matter how loud you shout in Singapore, they will never hear you in London. And add on to that, but what we're seeing on the screen is a replay anyway. But why is it that people do that? Why is it, again, just to make it gender neutral, that you see women especially start crying during a movie? "Oh, it's so sad. The hero died. Saving the world, but died." You know, when I do go on aircraft, often watch those movies without the soundtrack. Try that next time you're on a movie, on an aircraft. Watch a movie, but don't turn the sound off. Don't take the headphones. And see what it's like without the headphones. It's a totally different experience because the music, is usually background music, they're actually telling you how to react. Whenever there's anything exciting, so the music is very, very soft. And wherever there is the love scene, it's usually violins. We're so conditioned and brainwashed. But if you take that music away, you take all the dialogue away, the movies are just so, what am I calling, for infants, not for grown-ups. Because you know the plot. It still happens these days, apparently. I noticed this when I was a young man. Yeah, we did have these monsters, these mutants. What I remember was Tarantula. And Tarantula was a spider who was involved in a nuclear accident and mutated into being so big it could hardly fit through one of these double doors into this room. But the spider tarantula would crawl up behind people and eat them. But he would only attack. And I noticed this from the movie, because in my mind, we're not getting emotionally involved. What's going on here? Would only ever attack the young, beautiful girls. If you are old and ugly, you are perfectly safe. And apparently the same as in vampires and zombies as well. Check it out! Then I was doing one of these monster movies. They only attack the beautiful people. So people like me are old and ugly. But I'm perfectly safe, that's why I'm never afraid of zombies and ghosts. But anyhow, why is this that people cry? They get emotionally entangled in the movie. And for those people watching the soccer, I've done that before when I was a young man. You're actually watching it on the TV screen, maybe a replay, and it feels psychologically you're right inside the screen. You're at the stadium, watching it happen. Because that is what the psychology, what it makes you feel like. That is the only explanation why you would stand up and shout. Because you actually believe that within the action, you've got it tangled. The same way you cry after a movie, or you get excited when the world is about to end. Because you get brought in, taken in, and you're entangled. You're part of the movie. That's why I still remember Max Rachel movie. Somebody shouted out in the audience, "Look behind you, Tarantula is coming." And that's the funniest part of the movie. The people in the audience shouting out, "Look behind you." But this is the same thing which happens with our thinking. We get entangled in our thoughts, as if they're real. We get emotionally within the thoughts. Even the previous thoughts about the past, it becomes like me again. We're like an actor playing a role in something which happened many weeks ago, months ago, years ago. We even tend to repeat the conversation so we make it better next time. We don't make the same mistakes. We say what we really should have said. Of course, that's just getting entangled in something which has already passed and gone and dead. Even your memories of the past are like fantasies. People always think that maybe the future is a fantasy, but your past is a fantasy as well. It's not real, it's not true. It's just a replay of what you thought should have happened. I can't trust the past at all. I've noticed why good people have arguments about the past. What happened? Who said what? Who did what? These are good people. Sometimes we all think we were right because our memories of the past are not accurate. We change the past without us knowing it so it suits what we thought should have happened. So you can't trust that. So the only way you can actually disentangle from the past and the future and all your thinking and fantasies and dreams is to try and somehow draw back from your thinking. Get some distance. Be an outsider of your thoughts, not an insider. So you can be like a supervisor by seeing them from above, like a Google Maps, so you can see where all the territory is. But you know you're above and outside and beyond. Like that simile I gave in one of those first books about going to the Yucatan Peninsula in Central America, climbing one of those big pyramids, and being able to see all of the forest, like on Google Maps, because the top of those pyramids in the Yucatan Peninsula, built by the Mayan civilization, they were above the jungle, above the tree lines, and there you could see how it all fits together. And then that's one of the jobs of meditation, to be able to stand back from your thoughts. Not be inside and entangled, but be above and beyond and outside. See them as an outsider. So there you can actually see what's really going on. And just like a movie, if you stand back and watch from a distance, you know how inane, stupid, how it mocks your intelligence. And you don't want to watch them anymore. You stand back from sport, like soccer. See how stupid that is. I don't know, I remember how many teams play in the World Cup soccer final. I think there was about 36. And only one of those teams, only one, will go home happy. 35 will go back disappointed and depressed. The odds of you having any happiness are 36 to 1 against. And even if your team does win, even if they do win, you're only happy for a week, you forget all about it. It's just not worth it. I know most people here from Singapore, why on earth do you support the Singapore soccer team? They're not going to win the World Cup. You just ask them to come. Aren't you patriotic? Oh, yeah, but. I know a fellow from England over there. Oh, the English soccer team. That's caused so much depression for that country. They never win anything. They always lose. And I think last time people said, wasn't it to Iceland they lost something? It's a tiny, tiny country. And I think that's one of the reasons why. Isn't it one of the reasons why the Prime Minister resigned? Because of, not Brexit, because of World Cup exit or something. But why do people worry about such stuff?
Same reason why they're so entangled and involved in their thoughts.
You can be an outsider looking from a distance. You think, this is ridiculous stuff. It's one of the reasons when I wasn't very sporting at all. Because I remember the last game of soccer I ever played, it was only like a college match, a second event, nothing serious or important. And it happened that soccer is 11 aside. And the opposite college, only 9 people turned up. So it was 11 people against 9 people. And it was some ridiculous one-sided score, like 7-0 at half time. It was a stupid match. It was no fun in that at all. And so I went to ask the captain of my side, is it okay if I play for the other side in the second half and make a game of it? And it's just like you mentioned, like Liverpool playing Manchester United in this 6-0 to Liverpool. And one of them said, can I play for Manchester in the second half to make a game of it? I don't know why you can't do that. I know the game was more important to me than ever than winning. That's just the way I was born and made up. And I couldn't understand winning at all costs and all of the cheating and diving and drugs which go into sport, performance enhancing drugs. I must admit, I make a confession now. Sometimes when I meditate, or especially when I give a talk, I take performance enhancing drugs, a cup of tea, before I give a talk. There's the two vitamins I take for good health. You know the two vitamins you should take for good health? Vitamin C and vitamin T. Coffee and tea. They work. Quite happiness. But anyway, so when I never had that idea with sport of winning. Because I looked at it, what's the point of it? Just enjoying the game is more important. You can get out. Look at it from outside rather than being someone who's got a vested interest personally involved in the match. It looks so ridiculous. And that also means if you can look at your thoughts as an outsider rather than being right entangled in them, if you can just stand back and watch them, then you'll find it's so easy to let go of. They really are unimportant. They're wasting a lot of time. And most importantly, wasting a lot of energy as well. The more you think, the more tired you become. One of the reasons I have energy is not because of tea and coffee. After a while, you just get immune to the effects of the boost of caffeine. But one of the reasons I have energy is because I know how to make my mind still. I have no thoughts. If you can manage that to have a peaceful mind and no thinking for a while, you get a huge natural boost in energy. People have told me this, your brain uses, I think, 30 or 40% of the energy of your body. Not your stomach or your other organs, not just walking around or running, but your brain uses a huge proportion, surprising proportion, the energy. And this is one of the excuses you'll hear in this 3 weeks, why I put on weight. Because I don't think very much. I don't burn so many calories like you do, worrying and thinking about stuff. So because I eat a small amount, but then I don't think so much, I don't burn off so much. So all that 38% which you would use thinking gets stored in my tummy. So it's not my fault. It's just like, probably you should actually teach me to worry some more, to think some more. But anyhow, you get much more energy available if you don't think so much. So, you stand back and you watch it, and it's pointless. It doesn't get you anywhere. It's one of the reasons which I really promote the wisdom born of silence. Because to solve problems in life, thinking about them is not the answer. Being silent, that's where you find the answers to many of the problems of life. Not thinking, and feel him and miss him. This last Friday night, because the topical question, nothing to do with meditation, well, it's supposed to do something with meditation, because we had the Manchester bombings, the terrorist bombings, that can't Buddhism or meditation help in that? I said, of course it can. Because one of the reasons why people get into that extremist ideology, and not just religious ideology, but so many different types of ideology and extremism, is because they believe their thoughts rather than being smart enough to feel their hearts. You have to be convinced, thinking, to be able to kill another human being, to blow up children. How can you do that? Could you do that? If you see the faces of the children, if you feel it in your heart, it can't be done. I've always noticed that as people think so much, they're the ones who can do terrible crimes. If you're silent, and follow the wisdom, not just the wisdom of silence, but the virtue of silence, you feel this is wrong, it's not right, you can't do it, then you'll be far more virtuous and less violence will occur in this world. You can't do that, it doesn't feel right. Thinking can justify anything. Philosophers can argue this way or that way, but silence is far more reliable, far more wise, and far more virtuous. So the silence is to be trusted more. A source of wisdom, a source of virtue. Let me give you one example of that. When I first came to this country 42 years ago, I knew enough about Buddhism that people should be keeping the five precepts. This was supposed to be 98% or 90% Buddhist in this country. And I was surprised. Buddhists who would come to the temple every day, who would take their five precepts, after they left the temple, would go fishing. I said, how can you go fishing and keep the five precepts at the same time? They said, no problem at all. How? He said, because we just take the fish out of the water. We don't kill them, they die by themselves. It's amazing how you can justify anything with thinking. So be careful about that. But wisdom, you can feel, this doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel good. So wisdom from silence, and also virtue from silence as well. So if you have a problem, you want to find some answer for it, be silent. Stop thinking about it. Be silent. And know. Even in Christianity, I don't know how this got in the Christian Bible, but it's there in Psalms, was be still and know that thou art God. Wonderful. Every Christian would practice that. Be still. Stop shouting around and making a big noise. If you want to find God, truth, wisdom, virtue, be still. So when you can actually stand back and just watch, many of the thoughts just vanish, they disappear. Simply because you're not entangled with them anymore, you see them for what they are, and they don't grab you. They just stop little by little until they suddenly go. Now it's a simile which splitting off these similes, they get around because of internet and other stuff. That was myself who started the simile. How big is the hand? My hand is so big I can't see anyone in this room at all. And I put my hand where it belongs at the end of my arm. My hand hasn't shrunk in size, it's still the same size hand. Because I've got some perspective, I can see everybody else's wrong. Just like there's two bad weeks for us. When I can just see two bad weeks, I want to destroy it all. When I get some perspective, it's not a problem anymore. Thinking, get some perspective. Don't put it right in front of you. Put it out there so you can see something other than the thoughts. See the silence. There is between your thoughts. The quiet. Which is always there. When you've got thoughts right in front of you, you can't see the quiet. The silence. On this retreat, to encourage the perception of silence and to take it away from thinking. Don't always wear your shoes, even walking to and from your rooms. Feel the carpet on your bare feet. Feel the concrete. Feel. Rather than always insulating yourself from life. For those of you who are brave enough, go and have a walk on the beach during the rain. Get wet. If you worry about it, we'll lose your hairstyle. Get my hairstyle, it never gets through to you. And anyway, it doesn't really matter here, it's not so good. It's only a retreat. So get wet, get your clothes wet, you dry them up afterwards. Remember what it was like when you were a kid? You go out into the rain, you get totally soaked, you feel the weather, you feel life. Because a lot of times you just think about it. There's a cartoonist in Melbourne which I really like, he's a very wise man called Loonie. And one of his cartoons which I have in my room over in Perth. Have a couple, they're watching a movie, it's a nature channel. And the documentary they're watching on their TV was that there's beautiful sunset somewhere. And that was on the left half of the cartoon, the family watching their TV, this beautiful sunset. And the right half of the cartoon was the window. And out of the window, that's where the sunset's actually happening. And they prefer to watch it on their TV, which is right over there, what's happening? Why is it that we always think about life instead of being in life and experiencing it. So, the way you can do that experience, when you go in the shower, don't just wash yourself. Feel the shower. Feel the heat on your body. Or even better, turn it really cold and become awake and alive. Feel it. And when you feel things like that, you're not thinking anymore. You're alive. Same when you are eating. You always call this mindful eating. And you know, you've got many chances here. You may eat three times a day, and also you have afternoon tea, and some of you sneak out for supper somewhere. I can always remember that time, remember Angie, when we had the executive retreat in Penang. I couldn't believe this how much you guys ate. Morning breakfast. A snack mid-morning, and then the lunch, afternoon tea. Spring rolls, I don't know what else you had there, I remember spring rolls which you all had. And then you had the dinner in the evening, and then, yeah, you put your hand up. Was it delicious? Yeah, because I don't eat so much, that's why. Also, and in the evening, after the last talk, you went on there for supper, down in the food stores. It's Penang, very famous for its food, so you had to enjoy it. I'm thinking you would spend more time eating than you did actually. But that's okay. But anyhow, so it's amazing just when you are eating, learn how to eat. Do you know how to eat? Because a lot of time you're eating and talking to everybody. How can you enjoy the food when you're busy having a conversation with somebody else? You're talking about the government, or about family, or about
And when you put his stuff in your mouth, you don't know what you put in your mouth. You're not being aware.
So, on this retreat, I don't know how much you like eating. So, eat. But be aware of the taste of the food in your mouth. How it tastes, the texture of the jackfruit as it, you crunch it between your teeth. You get all the flavor out of it, enjoy it to the max. And don't talk to the person sitting next to you. Tell them, I paid a lot of money for this retreat. And I'm looking forward to this food. So shut up. I'm enjoying it. Look, if you're, even though you don't talk to each other while listening to a talk by me, imagine you're listening to some music, some fine music. And you go out with your partner, you go and have a conversation with them during the performance. Imagine doing a movie. And you're sitting there talking to each other. People behind them, shut up, we're looking at the movie. But you do know when you're eating. So, next time you're having a meal, notice the flavors of the food and enjoy them and don't spoil them until all the flavor is gone. Chew it to the max and enjoy it. Any of you who have problems with your digestion, you'll find out why you have those problems. You're not being aware when you eat. When you're not aware of what you eat, when you're not mindful, the juices don't come out of your body. I'll prove that to you now. Right now, very simple exercise. Just close your eyes, don't be a few seconds. With your eyes closed, imagine your favorite food. Imagine it. And almost see it there, hot and steaming, right in front of you. From your favorite food store. Imagine it, almost like you can smell it. Can you smell your favorite food right now? Can you look at it? Imagine it. If you do this properly, the lime will be coming out of your mouth. Can you probably open your eyes now? Can you feel the saliva coming out? When you're mindful of your food, when you're actually eating it, not just thinking about it, you actually find that more saliva comes out. It digests much better. But more than just the old digestion, you're learning how to be more alive, more awake, more mindful, more here, rather than living in the realm of thinking. If you can start doing this, you're here, you can feel, you can hear. Another thing is just, if you do go out by the beach, listen to the sound of the waves crashing as they come up the beach. Listen to everything you've got. Don't think about plans and memories or fantasies. Listen as fully as you can. That is learning how to be mindful by stopping the thoughts and having something which is more important, more interesting, and more helpful for you. Life. Even the great British philosopher, the Liverpool John Lennon, used to say, life is what happens when you're busy planning something else. And I remember hearing that. Life is what happens when you're busy planning something else. And why is it that so many people complain? Oh, life goes so fast. You see, only a month or two ago, we were at the executive retreat last time. In Hooverhead, and here we are, another retreat. 11 retreats, according to Angie. That just seems like yesterday, when we first had our retreat. Is life going so fast for you? If it is, I remember many of you are over halfway. More than halfway. So, you haven't got that long left. So, slow down. Enjoy what you've got left. Stop rushing to the next destination. But pause. so you can enjoy life while you have it, while it's here. Savor every day. Savor every moment. Be here. Because if you're not here very much, the days and weeks, they pass so fast. Stops you thinking and makes you feel, makes you be, makes you alive, sensitive. Yeah, when you think of all you have to rush. Yeah, when you go to the airport, sometimes you have to run to catch the plane. Have to be once. In Changi Airport, I was walking to the gate to get my flight, and there's a whole heap of Indonesians. Where are you? The Indonesians, they've just come back from pilgrimage to India, and they noticed me. Ajamra, can have a photo. My photo is about 30. Why don't you take a good photo? No, individual photos. Be next, lucky. Just one more. And by the time I can run to the gate, when I ran to the gate, they were calling out my name. Last of all the flight. So sometimes you have to run, but most times you don't. You take it easy, because be here. Otherwise, where are you running to? That story of one of my friends. I was in the city centre in Perth doing something, and he shouted out at me as I was going past, "Ajamra, how are you going?" And being a fool, I said, "I'm getting there." Never ever say that, "I'm getting there." Because he told me, or asked me, "Where exactly is it you're getting to?" That really stopped me and made me think, where are you getting to? If you're getting somewhere, where is it going? Is that another place you're going to? The coffee. You're going to your box. So, stop going to your box. Or at least, slow down. Make it last as long as possible before you go in that final box. So, when your own hands go down and you be, silence becomes more important. Slowing down, relaxing. Then you find it's pretty easy, the way you meditate, to be here. Not trying to plan where you're going to go to next. Not thinking about what you had for lunch, about breakfast today, and planning, what you have for lunch, what you have for lunch today. You decide, have you ever looked at the menu yet? What you have for lunch? What would you like for lunch today? Western? Thai? Maybe have some Chinese food? Maybe some Sri Lankan food? What are you going to have for lunch today? It's not lunchtime yet, so shut up! Wait for it to happen. Rather than planning everything far too much. So that way we can enjoy this moment and then stop thinking. Now, one of the little siblings which I developed to help you not think so much is a simile of the two heavy suitcases. Now, many of you have just come back or just arrived from overseas. And even if you come from Bangkok, you have suitcases as well. I can't believe how many suitcases you carry to come on a retreat. You know, those who pick me up from the airport, how many suitcases did I have? None. Just have my little musk bag. Don't need that much. This is not a fashion contest in this retreat. You wear the same old clothes. You can have, you know, one clothes to wear, another clothes, you know, just spare it so you can wash one and use the others. So what you got in your suitcases? Just one change of clothes is enough. You don't even need to have a toothbrush. They sometimes supply them in these hotels. You don't need words big enough for you to have to take with you. But anyway, when you are carrying suitcases, I remember once seeing these people just carrying two heavy suitcases, and all you can see how they were struggling with the weight. So, I developed a simile. And the person, when you start meditating, you close your eyes, you make your body comfortable. Imagine, visualize yourself, you're carrying two heavy suitcases. Or shopping bags, if you prefer shopping bags. And in this meditation exercise, you look at one suitcase or shopping bag in your left hand. And it's got letters on the outside. P-A-S-T, past. Because in that shopping bag, or that suitcase, you're carrying all those memories of what happened today, yesterday, going back as far as you can remember. Carrying a shopping bag or a suitcase with all your past memories. That is heavy. Especially some of you have gone through difficult times, and that's extremely heavy to be carrying that all the time. And the shopping bag in the other hand, or the suitcase, that's got the word F-U-T-U-R-E, future. Next, some of you, it's even more heavy. All your fears, what's going to happen next? All your worries, concerns, and a few dreams as well, and hopes. Carrying all of that in the other bag. For most people, they carry those suitcases or bags 24/7. Even they go to bed at night, they're still carrying it. They dream about it. They worry about it. Isn't that stupid? Isn't that dumb? Once you can see what you're doing, the solution is obvious. You put the suitcases down. Take a break. Rest. Relax. Because when you put the suitcases down, all the burden disappears. You feel so free. Why not just take my bag and just go straight through the customs? No one checks anything, just a bag. How is it in there? Means you are light. You travel light, travel free, so easy. So you travel light, travel free through your life, not carrying so many burdens. So this is an exercise you can imagine yourself doing through one of the guided meditations, putting down the two suitcases. One representing the past, one representing the future, so you feel light and free. When the meditation is finished, then you pick up the bags again if you want. But through the meditation, you put them down. So the burden of your past and the burden of worries for your future, you put down for a little while. Sometimes it's hard to let them go. We do a visualization to help them let them go. And once you let go of most of your past and future, then yes, you're pretty much free. Nothing much to think about. Except if you're trying to get somewhere in your meditation. If you have goals you want to achieve. If you said to the organizers, if I don't have peace during this meditation, I am going to ask for my money back. If I don't get chance, enlightenment, if I can't fly by my own levitation back to Singapore after this retreat, then it's a failure. I will ask my money back. And of course, I told a few people at the airport, every retreat, every instruction which I give, I make this guarantee. I don't lie, I won't lie. If you are disappointed after this retreat, yes, you are permitted, you are allowed to ask for your money back. Angie, I told people that and I will stand by that. You're allowed to ask for your money back. You won't get it back, but you're always allowed to ask. Let's be careful. I should have been in business. But,
But it's not trying to get somewhere. Your job is to be here.
Not get somewhere. Be here.
When you're being here, all this peace, this joy, this charm, as it happens. But not when you're trying to get it. Just being here. Relax. Be peaceful. That peace upon peace upon peace upon peace upon peace build up. When you have lots of peace, wow. Then you'll try and have a wonderful time in meditation. So please make peace. Stand out from your thoughts. No past, no future, put them down. Relax. Learn how to feel the heat, the cold, the rain. Enjoy the food. Taste as much of it as you can. Really taste it. That's the time of being mindful. Meditation, people think, is hard work. Real meditation is really enjoying yourself to the max. Being here when it happens. Not fantasizing, dreaming, being entangled in a false world of thinking, but coming back to the real world. This is the real world. When you're silent, when you're listening, when you're feeling, when you are.
I know you're having problems with my lunch. So do we have a secret?